This episode of RHR was brought to you by Unchained. Unchained is here building out the financial services platform for Bitcoin Standard. Their cornerstone product is their Vault product, a 2 or 3 multi-sig Vault where you hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. This is a collaborative custody model. They're expanding the offerings for their Vault where you can hold 1 key and you can delegate keys to other institutions. You can hold no keys if you're an enterprise level. They have a lending desk as well. You can use Bitcoin as collateral. If you're a business, to get out a U.S. dollar loan. They have an IRA product. If you want to roll your fiat IRA into Bitcoin, Unchained makes it very easy. They're expanding their product offering every day. They have a trading desk if you want to buy large sums of Bitcoin and send it straight to cold storage, multi-sig cold storage. They make it very easy. Go to unchained.com, set up a call with their consultation team today, their concierge service team. Use the code RHR for $50 off that consultation. Unchained.com. Use the code RHR. This episode of RHR was also brought to you by good friends at CoinKite. They make the best hardware in the space, including this block clock, which is right behind me. Their hardware wallets are the best. I use the Cold Card Q. It's been my daily driver for many months now, and I think it is the best hardware wallet on the market. It is a beautiful form factor. Looks somewhat like a BlackBerry. It's got a battery pack. You never have to plug it into an internet connected device. However, it is QR code and NFC compatible. It's got a QR scanner and an NFC compatible device in it. They just pushed push TX functionality to the Cold Card Q firmware. Actually happened yesterday. And so now if you want to construct and sign a transaction on the Cold Card and then broadcast it via NFC and mempool.space, you can do that with your phone very easily. Best hardware in the space. Go to coinkite.com, pick up a Q, pick up a Cold Card MK4, pick up the SATS cards, the tab signer, the block clocks. If you want the best hardware, go to CoinKite.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Whew. What a week. 7 days since the hot style takeover in Nashville. It feels like a month. I had a 2-day cross country round trip. Got back at 3 a.m. last night. It's been a drag. It feels like a Tuesday to me right now. Luckily it's Thursday. We're here for the latest Ripple Rabbit Hole recap. Why don't we start with some recap on the week that was?
Yeah. I mean, first off, huge shout to all the ride or die freaks that showed up for the live show in Nashville last week. 600 person sold out crowd. I think I can speak for both of us that it was kind of unreal. It felt like a big moment for us and the freaks. And thank you to everyone who came and showed up. And obviously, like, shout out to the freaks who weren't able to make it to Nashville and support us from afar. I think we're going to do that more often, so there'll be more opportunities.
Yeah, it was extremely humbling. I mean, I know we had our pre-show conversation on stage. It was crazy to look out and see everybody joining us in person, to think of how far the show has come from 2019, the first Bitcoin conference live RHR that we did, when we were sitting on a picnic bench talking into like UN mics that we had to pass around. It's crazy to see what can happen in 5 years. And shout out to everybody who showed up. Shout out to the team at PubKey. It was really the engine behind the logistics and the planning, locking down that venue and all the added entertainment value that came with the show. So Thomas, Daniel, Dan, Jerk, everybody at PubKey, shout out to you guys as well. It was an incredible night.
Yeah, they crushed it. they really did great, both in the planning side and also day of, making sure everything went smoothly. By the way, freaks, we're aware my video is going in and out. We have, because last week wasn't crazy enough, we have like 80 Bitcoin developers here for Rust Bitcoin Week at the park. So hopefully they're not all torrenting on our network at the same time, but I think they're straining the park's resources a little bit.
It's likely the case. Shout out to you, Rod, Harry, everybody at Bitcoin Park for last week too. That was an incredible week at the park. High Signal, governor of Tennessee, head of the TVA, Senator Hagerty, Senator Lummis, Madex. We got up there on stage with Madex and talked for a bit about bull Bitcoin and Bitcoin jungle. It was an incredibly high signal week at the park, eclectic mix of speakers from many different parts of the Bitcoin ecosystem. BitDevs started BitDevs Tuesday night, 1031 event Wednesday, and then Thursday, Friday, High Signal. And then, of course, the conference as well, which was shout out to the Bitcoin Magazine team for putting that together.
Well, I mean, on the park side, I mean, you name dropped a lot of big names. It's pretty crazy. It's been pretty crazy getting to know our local Tennessee senators. Obviously, Senator Lummis has been a champion of Bitcoin for a long time from Wyoming. It was great to have her here at the park. It's been great to get to know her better. They seem to get it. They seem to want our advice and feedback and open discussion, which is incredibly empowering and inspiring to see. Of course, on the pure Bitcoin side, we also had Jack Mallers during the 1031 event. We had Will Reeves from Fold. We wrapped up the whole week with a fireside with Michael Saylor. Me and Michael, it was great to have him at the park for the first time. I thought that was a great conversation.
It was.
By the way, freaks, most of these conversations will be, we recorded them in high quality. They'll be published over the next days and weeks. So stay tuned for that. I think any conversations Marty had at the park, he'll probably post to the TFTC feed. We'll be posting things to the ARC YouTube feed. I'll be posting the conversations I had to the Citadel Dispatch feed. Yeah, just stay tuned for that. And to all the Bitcoin Park members who showed up and got to see it in person in our intimate 200-person event space that now has a 16-foot by 7-foot TV, which is ridiculous, just permanently in our event space that was donated by a member, graciously donated by a member, is now permanently in our event space. It was just an unreal week, absolute unreal week. And then, as Marty said, then the conference started. It's pretty crazy being the hour opener for President Trump. There's like 2 million people watching the live stream. That was a little bit crazy for me. And I got to meet Dr. Ron Paul for the first time, which was a personal highlight.
That was the GOAT.
If you look to the freaks that listen to the Citadel Dispatch, the most recent one with Wiz and Soft Simon, they already got this alpha, but I assume Marty hasn't. You know, Marty, you're aware that when I was on the live desk, I was wearing the same headphones as Dr. Paul.
So have you not showered since Saturday?
Our ears kind of kissed.
Dr. Paul is in my ear. Yeah, no, it was incredible. I mean, you got some zero hedge tick that day. The Bitcoin Magazine live stream was competing with the White House YouTube live stream, and I believe the White House had less than 1,000 people, and the Bitcoin Magazine live stream had hundreds of thousands at the peak on YouTube alone. I think there was more on Rumble.
Yeah, and there was other people were like syndicating it too, so it's like hard to calculate exactly. I think it's safe to say it was over 1 million people watching.
A million eyes on Matt Odell. Again, thinking back to 2019, telling people to smash by in that bull trap. What a difference 5 years makes. I think from a perspective point, not only us as individuals in the space, but I think everybody within Bitcoin should really take a step back and appreciate how far we've come in a short amount of time. And obviously that has come with new people supporting Bitcoin that many people are uncomfortable with, but I think this is the nature of the game theory that has been unlocked since Bitcoin launched in 2009. And it is insane to think in 5 short years, we went from sitting on a picnic bench on top of a parking garage in San Francisco to you live streaming to millions of people opening for President Trump speaking to Bitcoiners. It's happening fast. Like, this is what hyper Bitcoinization looks like, freaks.
I know it's easy, especially, you know, obviously we've been heavily in the thick of it, right? And 6 years every week of Rabbit Hole Recap. And I think it's easy to get like disenfranchised and think things are moving too slowly and they need to move quicker. But then when you do the zoom out, right? The meme template, you zoom out a little bit, you realize that this shit is moving quite quickly and we've come quite a long way, and we couldn't do without, you know, the thousands of freaks out there, the ride or dies just out there with us. And this movement is just incredible to be a part of.
It really is. So shout out to everybody who converged on Nashville last week, participating in the live show, at the park, at the conference. I think, we're leveling up, which is a good thing. It can be scary to some, but this was inevitable if you believe that Bitcoin's going to succeed. And as you freaks may know, this is the beginning of the reunion tour. It was the last RHR ever last week. Now, the reunion tour starts now, and I think we'll be doing a show every week from here on out. So if you want to participate in the tour, just make sure you're here every Thursday or Friday at some time between 1 p.m. Central and 5 p.m. Central.
1800 UTC.
Yeah. All right, with that, the show must go on. We're here to talk about Bitcoin. Let's get a state of the network on Clark Moody's dashboard. The current price of Bitcoin, we're dumping. Not an official dump yet, but we're at 62,960 cuckbucks. One cuckbuck's going to get you 1,588 sats. Currently sitting at a $1.24 trillion market cap. We are at block height 854,989, which means we have had a difficulty adjustment, which I believe happened yesterday, and it was a pretty big one. Upwards difficulty adjustment of 10.5%, which is the largest difficulty, like total difficulty increase, not by percentage basis, but the amount of difficulty that was added to the network is the most, I guess, what's the word I'm looking for from like a total hash perspective. There are 195,011 transactions in Clark's mempool. If we spin over to mempool.space, which Wiz made a big announcement at the conference.
He fucking crushed it. Shout out to Wiz and the whole mempool team. I'm proud of them. They've done a really great job with the open source project, with the hosted instance, the main mempool.space instance, the tool set with the accelerator. I think the accelerator is absolutely massive. People don't really appreciate it. Particularly if you're more sophisticated with Bitcoin and you understand how to use replace by fee or child pays for parent. But newcomers, particularly in a high fee environment, it's going to be a godsend having the transaction accelerator just from a UX point of view. I mean, I had Simon and Wiz on Scylla Dispatch this week, and they actually say the majority of payments are through Apple Pay, which I feel like tells you a lot. It's like a new user doesn't understand why their transaction isn't confirming, and they're happy to go through the simple UX flow of just paying with Apple Pay and getting it confirmed the next block. It's a big deal.
Or it could just be a Bitcoiner. Like, I don't want to spend sats. I'll spend some fiat on this.
Well, I'll just go out on a limb. I know I'm usually not a very controversial person, but if you're accelerating your transaction with Apple Pay, you're not a Bitcoiner.
One thing to notice here, we have some mempool convergence. Clark's mempool was at 195,000 transactions. Mempool's mempool is only at 212. So 17,000 transaction difference. Clark's mempool becoming more well-endowed. You'll love to see it. But with that in mind, big difficulty adjustment yesterday. Just put this in context. Logan, will you pull up the tweet from Alex Thorne, Intangible Coins? He put this in perspective and said it much more eloquently than I did yesterday. The Bitcoin mining difficulty reached an all-time high after a 10.5% upwards adjustment in absolute terms. That's the term I was looking for. This was the largest difficulty increase of all time. In percentage terms, this was the 24th biggest increase since 2016, the 73rd biggest since 2012, and the 119th upwards difficulty adjustment of all time. So pretty massive change in the difficulty, which obviously has an effect on mining profitability. So with that in mind, I'm going to go over to insights.brains.com and look at the hash price with the price dumping. I would imagine that hash price is near all-time lows or at all-time lows, and it looks like it is at 4.5 cents per terahash per day. So with this upwards difficulty adjustment and the price dumping over the last couple of days, it's putting miners in a bit of a hurt locker. So if you're a miner out there, we feel for you. As a miner myself, I'm feeling the pain.
He feels for himself. Marty, you mentioned earlier that it's not an official dump yet. Is that like how they like constantly change the definitions of what a recession is? It's like, it's not an official dump. The definition is like not official dump unless Marty says it's a dump.
Yes, yes. I am the MBER of Bitcoin dumps.
Breaking, the central bank of Marty Bent says that Bitcoin is dumped.
So that's the state of the mining industry. Some big announcements in the mining industry. MicroBT came out with a new machine, 210 terahash, 16.5 joules per terahash, so very efficient, high-hashing machine. We had Marathon announce last week that they bought $100 million from their cash reserves. They bought $100 million worth of Bitcoin. So adding to their Bitcoin stack via their balance sheet on top of their mining operations. What else happened in the mining world last week? I mean,
I have it on the list, but a Bitax found the block.
Yes, that is massive. And pull up the tweet or the No Bullshit Bitcoin.
Scott from the BitAx project was in the event space of Bitcoin Park when it happened, just absolutely flipping shits. It was the coolest fucking thing to be a part of.
Yes. So a BitAx solo mined block 853,742. To put this in context, this BitAx is producing 3 terahash per second, and you compare that to the MicroBT I just referenced, that is like 1.5% of the hash rate that that one machine produces. They pointed their hash at Solo CK pool. And to put this in context, the probability, I believe, is 1 in 1.2 million for this particular BitAx to find a block. And so the individual running this BitAx made $200,000 by taking the risk and pointing their hash at Solo CK pool.
Yeah, we have Scott 9000 in the Nostra live chat. By the way, our Nostra live chat, just to remind you freaks, is rhr.tv/stream. You don't need a Nostra account to use it. And also all of our links are at rhr.tv. Scott 9000 saying he was watching me and Mallers talk at Bitcoin Park, and he just gets a tap on the shoulder on Tuesday. And it was a BitAx found the block. That's how he found out. Pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane. And I mean, really confirms that what we talked about when Scott was on RHR a couple months ago is that many people look at these small individual miners and scoff. But as last week proved, there is still a chance for these miners to find a block. And it's like the probability of finding a block should not deter you from buying a BitAx and plugging it in. Hopefully we see more of this moving forward.
I have one plugged in right in front of me. But we're true gentlemen and scholars here at the park. So it's directed to Scott's donation fund.
Oh, so nice of you guys.
That's the default address. And we haven't changed it because we want to support him, not because we're lazy.
Yeah. Other mining news. Disclaimer on the board of directors. Cathedra shareholder approval of the merger with Constellation Inc. also got exchange approval last week. So that merger has been consummated and the combined entity will begin operation or has already begun operations. And personally, very excited for the merger closing and what we have in store for the future. I think the infrastructure play, the hosting play, and eventually diversifying into HPC will be big for Cathedra. So shout out to AJ, Drew, Tom, Gavin, everybody working behind the scenes to get this merger through. Over the last 6 months, it's been a Herculean effort, and very excited for what's to come.
This rep of RHR was also brought to you by our good friends at Stack. Stack is a cloud sourcing platform that combines the power of humans and AI to make it easy for you to complete complex tasks as a business. They are currently looking for a technical product manager for their coding bounties program. So if you want to go stackwork.com and apply for this job, I would highly do it. Paul and team at Stack are building one of the most incredible and exciting products on the market right now. If you listen to Citadel Dispatch or TFTC with Carlino from Digital Witness, he explained how Digital Witness used Stack to confirm the results of the Guatemalan presidential election last year. And Stack basically enables you to put out all these tasks. In the case of Digital Witness, they had combination of AI and humans complete tasks to prove that votes looked a certain way and said a certain thing, and they got paid out in Bitcoin for it. So they're looking for a technical product manager for their bounties program. So go check them out. Stackwork, that's stackwork.com.
Another mining news. This happened today, but we've been covering it over the last few months and should mention, I don't know if you have it on the list, but Riot up their stake in Bitfarms. Now they have over 15% of Bitfarms. I believe their latest stock purchase was at an average stock price of $2.20, if I recall correctly. And this also comes on the heels of, I believe, the board of directors or shareholders basically rejecting the poison pill that Bitfarms tried to put into place, which was to push the overall percentage of the company that needed to be owned to 20%, which historically has not been the case. And so that attempted, I think what is correct or what is being defined as hostile takeover is still underway.
It's a hot style takeover.
A hot style takeover. Yes. A hot style takeover of Bitfarms by Riot is still.
To the slow freaks that needed to understand what we did there last week. There's 12 freaks that are like, oh, I get it now.
Yeah,
I'm one of them.
There you go. Logan figured it out.
So that's the mining world. I guess we'll hop into the list. I haven't even seen the list yet. And we'll start with everybody was excited about Trump. I think completely understandable. But I think what most people don't realize is obviously the rumors were building leading up to the conference that Trump was going to announce a strategic Bitcoin reserve. And to make that possible, as we mentioned a couple weeks ago, there's not really clear legal paths to do that. So the other big announcement, which happened right after Donald Trump spoke on Saturday, was Senator Cynthia Lummis presenting or announcing that she was going to present a bill that would create the legal framework by which the U.S. government could adopt Bitcoin as a reserve asset. And yesterday, she presented that bill to the floor, and it is the Bitcoin Act. It stands for the Boosting Innovation, Technology, and Competitiveness Through Optimized Investment Nationwide Act.
Oh, it's an acronym?
Yes.
It's an acronym. A couple of things here. First of all, this was the big announcement. I think people are fading this announcement. I don't think they really appreciate the significance. There is a bill called the Bitcoin Act that stipulates that the U.S. Treasury accumulates 1 million Bitcoin over the next 5 years. The efficient market hypothesis, people that think our markets are efficient, I think have mud on their face. Like, it's absolutely insane to me that the government that controls the reserve currency of the world is announcing a plan to accumulate 1 million Bitcoin. And the market's just straight up fading it, which is just, it just goes to show. I mean, I was talking to someone about this the other day, about like keeping alpha to yourself, and you know, keeping certain trade secrets or whatever to yourself. Like, Marty and I just, we like shout out our alpha every week, and most people just don't pay attention. And in this case, and also there's a failure to execute. Like, people don't have what it takes to execute. And transparency is good. It's good to be out in the open. So, I mean, I think this is like is another perfect example of that. Absolutely ridiculous to fade it. My second point would be, I think Senator Lummis means really well for both Bitcoiners and for the country. I think it's in America's best interest to accumulate a hard asset effectively back our debt with this asset. I mean, I think people are starting to question, rightfully so, why they would loan money to the U.S. government. Well, if you have a strategic Bitcoin reserve and you actually have hard assets that are effectively collateral for it, I think that assures the markets to a degree. I do really appreciate Senator Lummis's key point in the bill that this Bitcoin can only be used to pay down the debt. It can't be used for a million other things, which is what usually ends up being the case with government spending. They just start using it as a slush fund for a lot of other things. So I like that it's earmarked specifically for debt. The third thing I would say is I would really like, and I've been very repetitive about this, I would really like a policy in place that seized Bitcoin is burnt by default. You can provably burn Bitcoin just like you can provably burn cocaine. Actually, it's easier to provably burn Bitcoin than cocaine. And I think it creates better incentives. I don't think the government should be incentivized to take money from Bitcoiners and companies that are based in the United States. Trump kind of highlighted this, but then also like just completely failed in his delivery of it. He was like, they took this Bitcoin from you and now I'm going to keep it. It was a weird dichotomy. And then last but not least, bills take a lot of effort, especially bills that you're like trying to create bipartisan support for. They take a lot of effort and they require momentum and they require good people like pushing things forward. And there's a certain blue check that got information about this during that effort to craft this bill and decided that he wanted Twitter engagement over what was best for this country. And to you, my friend, not my friend, you can go fuck yourself. Like that is a shameful act. And I hope people don't quickly forget that, because I think it's just a good example of where his priorities are at.
Yeah, I co-signed that message, and attempting to front run this is, it did, I don't want to say put it in jeopardy, but it did have people scrambling behind the scenes. Like, what the fuck? This was like, because there's tact to announcing these bills too. Because if you announce it too early, then you give potential opponents to a massive bill like this the opportunity to try to prevent it from happening. Luckily, that didn't happen in this case, but certainly was not out of the realm of possibility from what I understand last week, which is just, this is so much bigger than any individual, Matt, myself, anybody else in the space. And if you're putting the potential for success of Bitcoin overall is something that is much bigger for us behind yourself. That's just like Matt said, you should do some introspection and really think hard about what you're doing here. Is this for yourself, or are you actually in Bitcoin to make the world a better place? But we don't have to belabor that point. I think another important part of this bill that we have not mentioned is that the bill lays out a framework for which the government will actually self-custody Bitcoin in a multi-sig split amongst different secure locations across the country, which I actually think is a massive signal as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's how it should be done.
Yeah. So
she had two strong memes, digital Fort Knox and this generation's Louisiana Purchase.
Yes.
As the senator of Wyoming, like the Louisiana Purchase hits extra hard as an example, because their land was part of the Louisiana Purchase. And it's crazy what a great deal we got on Louisiana Purchase. And people will look back. What's the other one is Alaska, right? It's like you look back, it seems so obvious. I remember reading about it in history books. It's like, what? They sold us all that land for that little money? It's like doubled the United States square footage. I thought that hit really hard. It's a good perspective. It's a good example. And it's crazy how much people are kind of sleeping on it and fading that announcement. I think it's a big deal for America. I think it's obviously a big deal for people that hold their savings in Bitcoin. But I do honestly believe that this type of action is pretty much the only type of action that can lead us to the next great American century. Like otherwise this country, like I don't know what other path gets us to a point where we can actually, you know, have our debt under control, because the debt is just getting absolutely insane.
Insane. And I think the framing of this opportunity as big of an opportunity as Louisiana Purchase is incredible. Cynthia's not the first person to do that, but her doing that is very powerful. And I think hopefully that framing really puts the opportunity into perspective for people who have been somewhat skeptical of Bitcoin or completely unaware. Like I'm just saying, the digital Louisiana Purchase has to stoke some thoughts in people's minds. Like, is this opportunity really that big? So shout out to everybody who worked on that bill.
Huge shout out to the Bitcoin Policy Institute guys. Those guys continue to do amazing work. The blue check I was referring to works with a different policy organization. And I think there's a big dichotomy between the work the Bitcoin Policy Institute does and the work that he does. Obviously, he's prioritizing engagement over all else. I would add here, you know, there should be bipartisan support on this. This should not be a partisan issue. I think this is clearly good for America. I think you just run the math and see. I really like that the bill relies on using excess reserves. This is money that's currently just being held as cash already. That should be in a hard asset. It shouldn't be effectively in our shitcoin and dollars. One other thing that I do want to mention here. Regardless of what you think of Trump's speech, I did appreciate that he reiterated his commitment to commute Ross on day one, Ross Ulbricht. I had the pleasure to see Lynn once again at the event. It's always humbling seeing her. Ross has done plenty of time. He's been in jail for 15 years now, over 15 years now. Regardless no, if you
think- 10 years.
Well, let's just add, I'm sorry, I apologize. It feels like 15 years. He's done plenty of time. And so even if you think he's guilty, even if you think that decade was worthy of the crime he committed of running Silk Road, it'll be truly wonderful to see him free. So, I mean, I hope that becomes a bipartisan issue too.
And on this bipartisan note, there's been a lot of speculation, and I think at this point we can only define it as pure speculation that the current administration is dumping Bitcoin. I would pause to jump to conclusions there, because I believe a month ago, the U.S. Marshals signed an agreement with Coinbase to change the custody model for how the government is currently custodying. And historically, when the government does dump Bitcoin, it has been somewhat transparent. They do these auctions. And so the meme that's been going around the last 2 days of the Biden administration dumping 28,000 Bitcoin, I think it's speculation. It could be true. But I would just mention that you, number one, have that agreement that was made between Coinbase and the U.S. Marshals. And then two, historically, this would be abnormal to how they've dumped their Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, I would say two things here. I mean, first of all, if the Democrats want to defang Trump, they should just commute Ross's sentence immediately. I think that'd be one great way of doing that, so that he can't do it if he's elected and he can't run on it. I think it would be great if they clarified the position of the DOJ and the Treasury Department that self-custody open source wallets are not money transfer businesses. That they're purely open source software and that it's protected speech. And last but not least, I would say it's easy to get Twitter engagement saying the U.S. government moved $2 billion worth of Bitcoin for 66 cents worth of fee. But if you understand basic on-chain heuristics, it was clearly, and obviously it's, you know, it's all a probability analysis when you do on-chain heuristics. It was clearly a 100,000 sat test transaction with $2 billion worth of change. And that on-chain heuristic is the 100,000 sats, 0.001 Bitcoin was a round number, and the rest was not a round number. And you don't end up in a situation where you have round number change like that. So it was very much most likely a 100,000 sat transaction, a small $70 transaction that had $2 billion worth of change. And all the headlines were like, the U.S. government just moved $2 billion.
Yeah. So be aware. And again, that's, I mean, bringing it up because we're mentioning that Bitcoin is bipartisan and this test transaction is being used as a way to make this partisan, like the Democrats are trying to undermine potentially incoming administration, but let's go to first principles, look at the history of how the government sold Bitcoin, pair it with that announcement that was made with the U.S. Marshals and Coinbase last month, and understand on-chain heuristics, which Matt just walked through. Let's not jump to conclusions. Pure speculation at this point.
Yeah.
And on the
It'd be fucking shameful if they decided to dump all the coin that was being held before the election just to stick it to Trump. But Bitcoin can handle that liquidity. Just stay humble, stack sats. It's the worst thing they can do to us is give us more ample stacking opportunities before nation state FOMO kicks in. Not much of ammunition that they have over there.
Yeah. You mentioned the Lummis bill being very targeted in taking down the debt in the future. I mean, I think the next topic, which is Tether's first half 2024 attestation, really pairs well with that. And so, Logan, if you could pull up Paolo's tweet. As you all know, Tether has been doing these, I think they have been doing quarterly or just every 6 months.
I believe it's quarterly.
It's quarterly attestation. And so they came out with the most recent attestation through Q2 of this year, and they're citing first half of the year stats. And so they have $1.3 billion in net operating profit. Tether does, and we'll get to how that's that profit is realized, and or how they actually get that profit. It ties to the topic that we started this subject with a $520 million increase in Tether's group owned equity, bringing it to a total of $11.9 billion, $5.33 billion in excess reserves, more than $97.5 billion in U.S. Treasuries, direct plus indirect exposure, and a $7 billion increase from the previous quarter, a new all-time high. I believe that's in market cap. I believe Tether, I checked last night, is around $114 billion market cap. And tying this to the Lummis bill, I think that is what many politicians and savvy financial pundits and operators alike are beginning to realize, that Tether is a massive demand driver for treasury bills specifically. And so if you look at their attestation, they're holding mostly short-term debt, so bills, 2 month, 3 month, 6 month. So the front end of the yield curve. And Logan, if you could pull up the yield curve chart, you can see why they're doing this. And this is how Tether is making these insane profits, because they need to hold reserves to back the Tether in dollar-like liquid instruments, which these bills represent. And so as you can see with this yield curve, the bills on the front end of the curve, 2 month, 3 month, 6 month, are all spitting out yields higher than 5.4%. So Tether basically buys these treasuries. They're making 5.4% on these treasuries within a few months, and then they're just taking the yield from those bills and taking it as profit. And as you can see here, the yield curve as it stands today is completely inverted. So this is an anomaly. Logan, if you go to the chart and you go back to like January 1st, 2019, you'll see what the yield curve has looked like historically. And it's complete opposite of what you see today. And so Tether is able to take advantage of... Oh, I gave you an image. Yeah, I thought you were on the site, but don't worry about it. The yield curve typically press goes the button up like this, not like this.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, like with it's supposed to usually be that you get a higher interest rate the longer you're willing to loan out your money for. And right now that's not the case. I mean, just huge shout out to the Tether team. They're a tiny team. They've absolutely crushed it. They've obviously have massive product market fit globally. Like, people rely and use that product all the time. And they're absolutely raking it in. They're crushing it. And they're using those profits and they're either investing them into Bitcoin directly. They're building their strategic Bitcoin reserve, which is getting quite large, or they're putting it into strong Bitcoin businesses that are building out the future infrastructure that we need as we start to move into a Bitcoin standard. By the way, Marty, I move to motion that every individual and every company starts calling our holding strategic Bitcoin reserve, because I just feel like it bangs. Like, I was like talking to my wife all the way. It's like, just stacking into our strategic Bitcoin reserve, honey.
I like stockpile. Strategic Bitcoin stockpile. You get a little alliteration there.
It's my SBR. Well, we can agree to disagree. That's quite rare on this show.
Yeah, SBR. SBR is better than SBS. So we'll give you that. The acronym SBR is way better.
There you go. It is pretty crazy that we've all been working on our strategic Bitcoin reserve longer than most nation states. So.
All right. Gavel hit. Motion accepted. I will concede that SBR is better than SBS. But seriously, on this, and there was a lot of discussion about this particular problem with the inverted yield curve at the park, at the conference, and then actually on RHR Live at the Hot Style Takeover. And I think Preston really got the conversation going early in the week. Spoke with Jack Mahlers about it, talked with Parker. We talked about it on stage with Parker, Jack, and Pierre Morgan Rochard. But this problem that the government has on the long end of the yield curve, 20-year bonds, 30-year bonds, is obviously because the U.S. is in so much debt. They've issued so much debt. They've weaponized the treasury rails by freezing treasury assets of other nations. Like, the treasury has a massive problem, and that demand for these long dated treasuries has fallen significantly. And if they would like to restoke demand on the longer end of the curve, they probably have to think creatively and out of the box. And I wrote about this last night in the Bent when I was on my flight home, like pairing Cynthia Lummis's Bitcoin strategic reserve bill with out of the box thinking at the Treasury being, and if you guys actually listen to this on the car ride back, because I sent out the newsletter and somebody responded like, hey, they talked about this on What Bitcoin Did with Preston and Luke Roman. So I listened to that on the car ride back to my small village by the sea last night. And a way that the Treasury could think creatively is like, all right, the stoke demand on the long end of the curve, we will basically put 5 to 10% of long duration bond issuance into Bitcoin and hold it in there throughout the duration of the bond's life. And that's a massive problem. And they may have to think creatively to do that. And if you think pairing that strategy with the strategic Bitcoin reserve, who knows if I'm speaking out of my ass, but like, I think that's the way you create like a multi-decade soft landing and begin to chip away at the debt. You tack it from both angles, from stacking Bitcoin into the reserve and then issuing this debt that is dual collateralized with cuckbucks and Bitcoin, and you sort of meet in the middle at some point in the next 20, 30 years. Could be crazy.
Yeah, I mean, they should just stack coins.
That's a good way to stack too, because you could put the Bitcoin in the note, and then you just pay out in cuckbucks and
strategic Bitcoin reserve. Don't fade it.
And we're going to get deep into macro here. Last macro topic, which is something that people should be aware of. I think Zero Hedge, Luke Roman, and others have been talking about this for well over a year. But the Hudson Bay Capital came out with a paper, funnily enough, co-authored by Nouriel Roubini, who is a notorious Bitcoin hater, but props where props are due. I read this paper last night on the plane, and they're just simply being descriptive of what's happening in treasury markets right now. And so for the last couple years, the treasury has been issuing an abnormal amount of short-term bills as opposed to long-term duration bonds, and that's acted as stealth QE. And so I'm not going to dive into the particular details, but basically the dynamics of offering these short-term bills has led to more liquidity in the markets, which is why equities markets have been relatively elevated despite not so good economic data if you actually dig into the numbers. And then also what this has done has drained the reverse repo market at the same time, which has forced the Fed's hand to like ease their quantitative easing. So you have the Treasury basically interjecting, offering 2 to 3x more treasury bills than they have historically over the last 2 years. And it's had this sort of stimulating effect to the economy. So something to be aware of. Thank you for bearing with my macro talk.
I've just been bonding with the Nostra livestream folk. Yeah, I mean, just stay humble, stack sats. Every individual, every company, every government. Like, the answer is quite simple. People are just overthinking it. I mean, so I'm just going to show my suit stupidity here. My basic understanding is with this inverted yield curve, like, that's the market stating that long term they think inflation gets under control, right? That's why they're willing to tolerate rates that are so low. Am I correct in that?
So that they don't have confidence in the ability of the government to control their debt.
So or wouldn't inflation. Long-term rates be higher in that situation? Like, who's buying, you know, 10 years at a lower rate than a 3-month T-bill?
Well, it's really confidence in, like, you take on duration risk, and then part of the calculus in that risk is like, what do you think the U.S. economy is going to do over that duration? And so it seems like everybody's piling into these short-term bills, number one, because they're being offered more than a long-term duration bond. So I think the offerings have a factor in the yields as well. Like, if you're not going to offer what you have historically offered on the long end of the curve, like, maybe you can make the argument that the yields on that end of the curve are not indicative of how people have basically interacted with these markets in times past. But
Nick Logan, yeah. Can you pull up the picture that Marty pretended was a chart you could click?
I forgot it wasn't the site. Yeah, it's basically long. Like, if the interest rate's higher on the long end, like, it's if you have a non-inverted interest rate curve, yield curve, so, it's basically you have confidence in the long-term viability.
What is the years on the bottom?
That's not the years. That's the different durations. So yeah, okay. The reverse repo, 1 month, 2 month, 3 month.
Yeah, yeah, like the number of years. Like, so the 10-year, like, people, who is the fucking idiot that is lending the U.S. government a 10-year loan at 4%? Am I wrong on that?
Could be forced buyers, probably Japan, even though Japan has been dumping treasuries, but.
Okay. Well, yeah, they should just stay home on stack sats instead.
They should as well.
Logan, do you hear the echo when I speak?
It's a little something.
It's Marty's. It.
No, you talk. I don't see any green.
No, everyone, like, if to the freaks that know, it's if you hear an echo of someone, it's usually the other person who's at fault, not the person who's echoed.
This does not seem. This seems Are like you some wearing headphones? No, and I haven't all summer. And we know, Logan and I, that you had massive technical difficulties before joining the show. No, so.
Well, but the way that echoes work, like, I'm seeing a thing pop up on your little indicator right when that tiny bit of echo happened. Although it's barely there. I can barely hear it.
Thank you, Logan. This is why I keep Logan around. It's good. It's good we have a tiebreaker.
I just turned my mic down, so hopefully it solves the echo. If there even is an echo, I'm certainly not hearing one.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't, because it's your fault. That's the point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, moving down the list, we have more to get to.
By the way, there was one freak who was there was one freak in the YouTube comments. By the way, freaks, I read the YouTube comments. Like, in the YouTube comments after the show, that said, this was like four shows ago, that said, Matt, why do you keep interrupting Marty during macro talk? We all want to hear the macro talk. So now I just stand here. I listen to the freak. I let Marty go for it.
It's interesting. It fascinates me. And has for since 2008. And you gotta know what these people are doing.
Did you see my
response? Staying humble and stacking sats.
What? Did you see my response underneath him when he did that? It was like, I was like, noted, we'll do better.
Yeah, I did. Appreciate it. Thank you for letting me tickle my fancy with the macro corner.
Just stay humble, stack sats.
Yeah. We have the Human Rights Foundation story of the week, which comes out of Russia. We mentioned this on stage at the Hot Style Takeover, but there's more context here. So Russia has introduced new and repressive digital asset laws. Many people have been reporting on this as Russia accepting Bitcoin, but the Human Rights Foundation is clarifying that Russia's Federal Assembly recently passed two new digital asset laws with significant implications for Russians' financial freedom. The first law legalizes cryptocurrency mining, and the second establishes an experimental framework for cross-border digital currency transactions. But these laws hint at troubling implications. While the first law permits mining, it confines it to mining entities registered with the Ministry of Digital Development and grants executive supervisory powers to the Central Bank of Russia. It also includes a ban on digital asset advertising. The second law, which becomes effective in September of this year, mandates that all digital assets platforms obtain licenses from the Central Bank, which will oversee and collect detailed transaction data. The Human Rights Foundation's nonprofit Bitcoin Adoption Lead Anna Chekovich warns that these laws place Bitcoin miners and exchanges under the control of the central bank while monitoring and targeting activists and nonprofit organizations that rely on digital assets like Bitcoin. Putin is consolidating control over digital assets while undermining financial freedom in Russia and moving forward with CBDCs. So to learn more about this story and many others that the Human Rights Foundation covers on a week-in, week-out basis, you can go sign up for this newsletter at financialfreedomreport.org. Whew. Yeah, I've seen a lot of tweets about this. I think the fine details are important. Registering miners with the central bank, exchanges. Yeah, we do have similar dynamics here in the U.S., but there are layers of protection that users and exchanges have, even though they're a bit light, but you're supposed to issue these suspicious activity reports so the government doesn't get defined transaction detail unless there's reason for it. But I see you scowling. What do you want to mention?
No, I just usually with these things, you get the most engagement either saying, insert country has legalized Bitcoin to the moon, or Bitcoin has been banned in this country. And usually it's the nuance is somewhere in between. And I think the team at HRF that is focused on the Financial Freedom Report does a really good job with the nuances.
Yeah.
It's usually a bit of both.
Yeah. With that note, we have 2 weeks worth of boosts to read, going all the way back to Rabbit Hole Recap 314, Bitcoin trumps all. Top four boosts in the week, Pringles stacks, 77,777 sats, sevens across the board, palindrome boost, DEI must die, epic rip. Good luck next week, fellas. Whatever your political leaning, having the next president of the USA at your conference is beyond extraordinary. You are the new guard of a better world. Big love, as always. And a bunch of emojis. Thank you, Sil. Appreciate the support. John's BRT boosted 50,001 sats. Who was Trump's special guest that didn't show? Matt said he knew and it was worth it. Now the show is over and I'll never know. Did you know? Or were you just...
Okay, so we're on the live desk. We're on the live desk. And I was actually supposed to just... I'm just going to give full context because fuck it. Who cares? And I like being transparent with you freaks. I always like to be transparent with you freaks. So we're on the live desk. It's just me and Rizzo, me and Pete. And I'm supposed to comment my Pete had reached out and was like, do you want to be the commentary after Trump's speech? And I said, sure, that sounds great. I would love to. I like doing live streams with Pete. And it was a, you know, monumental moment for Bitcoiners, for everyone. I think it was a big deal, obviously. The president, the former president, the potential future president is coming to speak at a Bitcoin conference for the first time. It's a big deal. So I get there at like 1:50, 2 p.m. So the Trump is supposed to speak at 2 p.m., right? So I get there at like 1:50. I'm supposed to get there at like 2:30. And they were like, oh, you can go if you want to go see like the Trump speech, you can like go to the Trump speech and then rush over here afterwards to give your commentary. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to hang out here. Like I'll sacrifice that. Like I don't have to go. I'll take one for the team. I can just hang out here. And so we're sitting there. And of course, after David Bailey goes out on stage and introduces Trump, like the expectation is Trump is going to come on. And there's like a little bit of a delay there. And it seems like, oh, he's not ready. He's not going to come on. And at this point, I'm sitting next to Pete, right? Like I seated myself on the, it's like 2 p.m. I had seated myself on the live desk sitting next to Pete. And I was like, okay, he's not coming out right now. Like, let's go live. Let's go live. Let's rip this thing. And Pete, God bless him, he was like, I don't know what to talk about. Like, we don't have a plan. Like, what are we supposed to talk about? Like, I don't know what's going on. I was like, doesn't matter. Let's go live. It's a monumental occasion. We'll talk about Bitcoin. We'll talk about America, freedom. Like, well, there's plenty of things. We have many things we can talk about.
There's things that can be riffed on, Pete. You can riff on anything.
So they're like, okay, we're going to put you on in a minute and a half. So they're like running the commercials, like, we're going to put you on in a minute and a half. So we go, we do the first, you know, 10 minutes or whatever. And then we go to commercial. And then at that point we were told that Elon's like security team was already on premise. And that Elon was going to be there in 20 minutes and that we were, that they were going to delay it for Elon to come. And we were like, can we say that it's Elon? And they're like, no, you can't, it's a security issue. You can't say if it's Elon. So like, okay. You know, and there's like a fog of war thing going on, right? Like we're getting like texts from backstage, like all this stuff's going on. All of this is happening in real time. And they're like, can we say it's a special guest? And they're like, oh yeah, you can say it's a special guest. Like, can we say the gender of the special guest? You can't say the gender of the special guest. It's like, okay. So it's like special guest, he or she is coming or whatever. And then that just kept happening. It kept going. We would go to commercial. Pete was like, oh, do we have something to talk about? I was like, yes, we do. Go back. Let's go. Let's go back to the live stream. And we were just in complete fog of war. What I've like, my understanding afterwards is that Elon like straight up went into a descent in his private jet, like into the airport, and then stopped the descent and then continued on in like a troll fashion to Memphis. And didn't actually land at the same time. And by the way, that's because Elon doesn't like speaking on platforms he doesn't control. And he spent a shit ton of money to make sure that he controls X because, he doesn't like speaking when he isn't in control of the narrative and the message. At the same time, there was a security incident that we were not made aware of. So there was like some lightning engineer apparently, like, and this is not inside information from me.
It's on Twitter.
Yeah, some lightning engineer tried to bring in a lighter.
Axios made an article about it, or wrote an article about it.
And I think the Secret Service like rightfully delayed the speech until they like found the guy and realized that, you know, he had gotten around security just because he didn't want to give up his expensive lighter. Which is, I think, completely reasonable. And we were not made aware of that. As far as I was concerned, we just had millions of people that maybe were Bitcoin curious, had no idea what Bitcoin was, but they just wanted to hear Trump speak. And it was our obligation to give them, you know, decent analysis and thoughts on how we were thinking about both Bitcoin, America, you know, Trump speaking at the Bitcoin conference. So I took that responsibility pretty seriously. But yeah, we were under the impression that the special guest was going to be Elon. I mean, I was particularly excited to give commentary on whatever bullshit Elon said on stage. And that was taken from me. And I like to at least think that personally Elon was like watching live streams, like, oh shit, I can't have Odell comment after me. And just kept going to Memphis.
Yeah. I was in the main stage waiting for him to come on. It was a long wait. I was with somebody very near and dear to your heart, and we had a good time wrapping it up with some people, but it did get a little long. Now with the context, it makes things understandable.
You were with my lady. She said you guys had like a pretty great time over there. She was like, yeah. I was with the best group of people over there. I was a little bit frustrated because they weren't broadcasting me and Pete into the live room and until the main room until like towards the end of it, right?
Yeah.
I was under the impression that we were keeping you guys busy for, I don't know, it felt like a fucking decade we were on that desk. But yeah, it was a crazy experience to say the least. But yeah, there was no, we were just trying our best to fulfill the responsibility that, you know, millions of people watching should have some solid analysis.
Yeah. And shout out to Skylar from Finite Supply for supplying you with that fire hat that you were wearing.
So that hat was one of 12 and it was a gift from Skylar. And I believe they're selling it now. I know Justin Moon supposedly tweeted it out, the link.
Skylar did too. I bought one.
Okay. Skylar did as well. The Bitcoin American hat. It fit the vibes perfectly for the day. And I will say that there was probably 100 Bitcoin companies that wanted me to wear their hat on that live desk. And I think for the good of the country, for the good of the Bitcoin ecosystem, it was important that I wore a completely unbranded hat that just fulfilled the vibes of the day.
Yes, it did. Shout out to Finite Supply. If you're looking for design consulting, hit up Skylar. Very good designer. We need better design.
By the way, he's also good friends with my wife. And he handed it to my lady right before RHR. And he didn't have a VIP ticket. So he's a ride or die freak. And she brought it to me backstage. And then I put it on for RHR and I just didn't take it off until after Trump spoke. So I just felt like that was kind of a cool confluence of events. There was like no expectation or request or anything. There's no hat conspiracy.
No hat conspiracy. We're still on shout outs boost from 314. Eric99 boosted 50,000 sats. Stay humble, stack sats.
Great advice. Everyone should just take that advice.
Apemith Randier boosted 7,777 sats, sevens across the board, palindrome boost. Stay humble, stack KYC free sats. Great advice as well. And now to the top four boost from the live hot style takeover in Nashville, 315 from last week. OK Sharp boosted 88,888 sats. Eights across the board, palindrome boost. Nashville was white supremacy emoji. Continuing shameless shill for TabConf, the Atlanta Bitcoin conference, a technical conference that is pleb friendly, October 23rd to 26th. Go to www.tabconf.com.
To the audio only freaks, it wasn't the white supremacy emoji. It was the, I don't know what we call it though.
It's okay. Like, it's like A-okay. It's like, it's okay. Like
fire. Nashville is fire. Marty, like we're at a certain stage now. We got to be.
Oh, come on. We can still bring some levity into the show. Okay.
Okay. But it's important that there's context for the audio only freaks. Cause he made the sign on the video.
At Eric99 boosted 50,000 sats. Stay humble, stack sats.
Oh, great advice. That was 2 weeks in a row, right?
Yes. At the tone wrecker boosted 12,354 sats. 12345, boosting the chaos factor of this episode. It was chaotic. But it was fun. And first of many, first iteration. It will get better.
The live one?
Yeah.
I'll take over. Yeah, it was a little bit chaotic in a good way.
Yeah. Last boost from last week's Hot Style Takeover episode at Fundamentals boosted 10,000 sats. David Lucas is the king of Bitcoin comedy and the official alpha of RHR. Okay, more business on air. We had no idea that we were getting roasted. We thought everybody in the audience was getting roasted.
Look, I didn't even know who David Lucas was before the PubKey guys suggested him, and I was wholeheartedly for it. I want the freaks to know that as he was walking off stage, off mic, I did tell him to sell all his shit coins and buy Bitcoin. And he said he's going to do that. So I'm quite proud of him. I think he's making a good decision for himself and his family. And I thought he was great. He came in, he's never seen anything like that before. 600 no. Ride or die freaks.
If you know the format of the Kill Tony live show that Tony Hinchcliffe hosts right down the street from the Commons in Austin at the Mothership, it is literally a podcast video show that's all about roasting comedians. And David Lucas is a mainstay on that show. So we had probably one of the best comedy roasters in the world come and absolutely torch us.
And I didn't know he was a Bitcoiner. I mean, also a shit corner, but I didn't know he had Bitcoin before he came, which is great. I thought we were going to have to explain the virtues of Bitcoin to him. But like I said, he just needs to sell his shit coins. It sounds like he's going to. I'm just grateful that my co-host is an AI-generated real estate agent.
That or you're on air with Barbara Bush right now.
Yeah. I did tell him to fuck off. I mean, as a former New Yorker, like the most offensive thing you can say is that you're from Rhode Island or Connecticut. So that one did hit me hard.
Yeah. Funny, like I'm used to this because the Comedy Cellar was one of the favorite recurring dates that my wife and I went on when we lived in New York. And I made the mistake of our first ever date. When we first started dating, I was still living in Chicago. We were long distance. And the first time I went to visit my wife in New York and stay with her, we went to the Comedy Cellar. And I made the mistake. I was 21 years old. I was like, yeah, we'll sit front row. It was literally our first date. We went to dinner. Then we went to the Comedy Cellar. And Dave Attell opened up. And I'm sitting right in front of the mic with my wife. And the first question he asked me on our first date is like, are you two in love? And I was like, And so I've been roasted by some of the best in comedy, and now I can say
ironically one of the worst things for him to say.
So a seasoned.
You never sit in the first row unless you want a show.
No, I learned it the hard way. Because if you know how the Comedy Cellar works, it's like first come first serve, and you get to pick your seats. My wife was, I think, at a bodega. Getting something, and they were like, where do you want to sit? I was like, yeah, we'll sit front row. And then they seated us. She was like, you told them we could sit front row. I was like, yeah, why not? And I found out pretty quickly why you should not do that.
Yeah. I mean, it won't be the last time we're roasted. I thought it was a good vibe.
Yeah.
It was definitely different. I think it's important too that, we got to change it up, keep it fresh, but stay core to our principles. Because it's we're all low time preference here, right? It's a long term thing.
Really is. With that being said, I know you've got a hard stop in 30 minutes. We get to the software update section of the show. Another big announcement last week, which was Proton launching Proton Wallet, a self-custody Bitcoin wallet. Pretty big news. They're leveraging BDK, which software update, not on the list, but BDK, I believe version 1.0.0 beta launched the Friday before the conference, or the week before the conference. And so this is pretty big, both for BDK and Proton, the company that runs Proton Mail, Calendar, VPN, and a number of different services. But Matt, I know you have more context than I do here, so I'll let you take it away.
So I've been playing around with the beta. Like, it's a great early, it's already a great wallet as it stands. Obviously it has a bunch of trade-offs. You are using their Electrum server. I think it's cool that they're hosting their own infrastructure. It's very important to them. It's also important to them that they have no custodial, ownership of funds, everything self-custody. It's a clean wallet. They plan to iterate over time and improve it over time. The Bitcoin via email that we talked about, I think last episode, where you can like send via email.
Talked about this on stage at the park. That's where we were talking about it.
They give you two wallets, right? So one is the Bitcoin via email wallet and one is your regular wallet. And then the Bitcoin via email wallet, that they pull 100 addresses from that so that it can serve a new address every time someone tries to send via email. The UX is quite great in that front. It just works really well, but it's nice because it's also separated cleanly from your other wallet, which they're not pulling addresses from. I think their priorities in the right place. I've worked with them in the development process for about 4 or 5 months now. I think it's a massive sign of credibility having like a titan in the privacy and sovereignty space move into Bitcoin in a real way. They have on-ramps that are powered like credit card on-ramps, depending on like where your country is. So you can buy small amounts of Bitcoin, which is cool. I think it's just a solid product. It's going to be rolling out to people over time. I think over the next month or so, they'll start rolling it out to the public in a real way. They want to, just properly test it out without having everyone overload it. But I think this is a really big deal. I think it exposes Bitcoin to a lot of people. It'll be people's first Bitcoin wallet. The UX of paying via email is great. It has no Lightning yet. They're trying to figure out a way to do it in a self-custody first way that doesn't have friction, which is really hard to do right now. So, I mean, my personal piece of advice to them was to just do on-chain only to begin with. Yeah, what does it say in this release? You can buy Bitcoin securely in 150 plus countries. When I checked, right, like we're obviously based in America, I was like, you could just pay with Apple Pay. There was a premium there, but you could pay with Apple Pay, like buy $50 worth of Bitcoin. I don't think it requires any additional KYC, but I didn't try and actually go through that process. I believe like the Apple Pay itself is like kind of the
KYC.
Because Apple doesn't really share that much information, but I guess if you got audited or something, like there's a trail there, a provable trail. But yeah, I thought it was cool. And huge shout out to their team. They shipped it quite quickly. They built on top of, you know, fundamental open source software like BDK and Electrum Server. They've been chatting with some of the best developers in the space. I've coordinated discussions there. I'm not going to say names, but some of the heavyweights, some of the open source contributors that we rely on the most. So their focus is strong, and they'll just make this product better and better. And I mean, I'm going to just say in general, like obviously it's got trade-offs, but I know Marty relies on the Proton Suite. I rely on the Proton Suite. It's in a class of its own, in terms of a convenient, user-friendly email, calendar, drive, everything, password manager, like everything, a VPN, obviously, like everything you could need. They provide very good-looking tools that are freedom-focused, that have good UX, that are very convenient to use. So it's good to see them come into the Bitcoin space in a big way.
Yeah, agreed. Shout out to them. As I mentioned, they're leveraging BDK. Shout out to Steve Myers, Matthew, everybody else working on that very important developer library, that kit, developer kit. That was a massive milestone for them last week as well, getting to version 1.0.0 beta.
So, I mean, BDK uses the Rust language, the Rust programming language. So, like, a bunch of them are at the park right now. So shout out all the people that are under the same roof as me right now. Kind of badass.
Rust so hot right now. So hot.
You're so hot. One thing I would add, I don't have it on the list, but I was supposed to announce it last week at Hot Style, and then David Lucas just roasted the shit out of me and I just forgot about everything. I think Bartali went, like, I'm not going to say whose kids they were, but
yeah, that was the open was like, I was like, oh shit, here we go.
Yeah, that, I mean, and you know whose kids they were. Like, he's a ride or die freak. He's a good friend. And he took it like a champ. Supposedly, like, afterwards I talked to him about it. He's like, yeah, you know, I came to, when you come to America, this is kind of what you expect. I was like, what is that? What is that? Satoshi Pacioli, the best accountants in Bitcoin, also based out of Bitcoin Park.
My accountant.
Yeah, like everybody, because they're Bitcoiners that understand accounting, and that's a rare breed. Wanted me to announce to y'all that if you are an OpenSats grant recipient and you need help with your taxes, they will do it for free. So we have 200 grant recipients right now. And if you need tax guidance, tax help, they're happy to provide it for free. And if you're not an OpenSats grant recipient, consider reaching out to them. They do fantastic work. They basically do accounting for everything. So
if you're running a Bitcoin business, accepting Bitcoin as revenue, putting Bitcoin in your balance sheet, having to sell Bitcoin to cover expenses, like, you want an accountant that actually knows how to handle all that stuff. And Joe and the team that he's building, which is getting bigger, the best that I've run into in the business. They're the best in the business. So hit them up.
Satoshi Pacioli.
Last on the list, but I do have one other thing I want to talk about after this. Software update, Albi Hub, a one-click Lightning node connected to all your Bitcoin apps. So Albi Hub is an open source tool that enables users to run their own node and connect to Bitcoin apps. It features one-click Lightning Node installation, a self-custodial wallet, and an app store for seamless integration of social media, podcasting 2.0 apps, and external Lightning wallets via Nostr Wallet Connect. So this is really cool to see.
Have you played with this yet?
Not yet.
But I neither do have a node connect to it. It looks awesome. So this is
to be honest,
public commitment to play with it and see how it works. But I've heard a bunch of good things about it.
Yeah. I mean, there was a flood of announcements last week. This is one of the ones that slipped through the cracks. And honestly, I did not see it until you put it on the list. But I have a node that I can connect to this. And it seems like they're monetizing it as well. You can get the Albi Hub Cloud plan at 21,000 sats per month. You can also opt for that. So they have two tiers here. Bring your own node, or you can run a cloud app node.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's what we want. First of all, I see Justifer, Bitcoin Park member, in the comments. Justifer, am I allowed to? Is your new product announced yet? Can I talk about it? Let me know in the comments. Justifer is mentioning that the name Pacioli is a reference to the invention of double entry accounting, which is a cool reference. I didn't know that.
You did?
No.
Yeah.
But I guess Satoshi is the triple entry accounting, so it's a good fit. No, I don't, like, my accounting history is not my strong suit, and I don't pretend it is. But yeah, Albi Hub, like, that's what we want to see. What we want to see is the UX of self-custody, self-sovereign, using your own node gets better to the point where it reduces friction and more people use it. Okay, looks like I got the go-ahead from Justifer. So Justifer is the CEO of Amboss. Amboss.spaces, you can kind of think of it as a Lightning Explorer. It's a Lightning services business. They provide a bunch of different tools for Lightning node operators, whether you're a professional node operator or an independent sovereign node operator, whether that's liquidity services, whether that's looking up details of nodes, whatnot. They just came out with their first self-custody app. It's called MiBanco.app. So MiBank.app in Spanish. I think it's a strong... It's a strong name, strong domain, Mi Banco.
MiBanco.
Yeah, MiBanco.app. What's kind of cool about it is it uses a similar model to Aqua Wallet, right? So at rest, your Bitcoin funds are held in Liquid, but you get a Lightning address. You have Tether access. So you can send and receive Tether, you can send and receive Bitcoin, you can send and receive on Lightning, and at rest, it stays in liquid Bitcoin, so your fee pressure isn't monumental. So it could be a good, and also it all runs through the web, just in a progressive web app. So it could be a great first touch user wallet. It's their first wallet. Maybe they're on Nostr and they need a Lightning address. This is a self-custody-ish product. Obviously, it depends on if you consider liquid Bitcoin self-custody or not, because it's a federated model. But I mean, net-net, it's substantially better than using a custodial Bitcoin wallet, which is what a lot of Lightning addresses use. It's open source. It's targeted at unbanked people in Latin America, obviously by Spanish. Sign up is just straight email plus password. It's cool. I think it's a cool take on a progressive web app. I think it could be very useful for newcomers.
Yeah, Justifer is describing it as the Bitwarden for seeds. So go check it out.
It's a cool concept. I got to play with the early beta. I found a bug. I love finding bugs. Big bug finder guy. Bug has been fixed.
Were you a big roly-poly guy growing up when you were a kid? I was a big Daddy Long Legs guy.
I'm not going to say what I was going to say, but yeah, I mean, kids should fuck around in the dirt.
They should
get their hands dirty. They should climb on shit. They should fall and learn the lesson. That's what makes strong humans.
This is a proud dad moment. Our oldest is finally comfortable jumping under the waves. So he now knows how to officially like get out to.
That's a win. That's a big one.
Yeah. Don't be afraid of the ocean. You should be afraid of the ocean. The ocean is.
It shouldn't matter what age you are. You should always be afraid of the ocean, but you should be comfortable in your skills and understand what's going on.
Yeah. Last thing I wanted to mention, I mean, we sort of glossed over it. We had Will Reeves speak at the 1031 event, but he was speaking about a monumental event for Fold as a company and us as a fund at 1031. Fold announced that they're going public via SPAC at the end of this year. So massive win for the space, the first pure Bitcoin-only financial services company to go public. Obviously, we've had miners, we've had companies like Block, like Tesla, but I think Fold being Bitcoin first and Bitcoin being native to their product from day one and going through the process of building a company, getting adoption, getting traction, getting revenue, profitability, and then going public is a massive validation, not only for the space, but our thesis at 1031 and the fact that there are very good businesses to be built on top of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I mean, I hate like SEC regulations and shit. I don't know like what we're allowed to talk about and what we're not allowed to talk about, but a huge shout out to Will and the team. Obviously 1031 was heavily involved. We're not lawyers. Was heavily involved in helping them through this process. A key aspect of this whole thing is a strategic Bitcoin reserve at Fold. I think every company, every individual, every government, every entity, nonprofit, everything should be focused on accumulating as much Bitcoin as possible. They should stay on Bold Stacks Ads. I will say, freaks, whenever we talk about private companies going public, which seems to be more and more of a trend here on Rabbit Hole Recap, don't take that as us saying that you should go out and open TD Ameritrade and buy the stock. Just stay humble and stack sats. That's what I will say. But I think this is a really big moment for 1031, for Bitcoin, for Will.
I've got nothing to add to that. Let's we'll leave it there. Got 15 minutes here. What else should we riff on, if anything?
I don't know. Anyone in the live chat? Does anyone in the live chat have anything you want us to chat about? Feel free. Talk about it. I don't know. I got nothing. I really do think people are underestimating the strategic Bitcoin reserve, the Bitcoin Act, whatever that acronym stands for. I'm just going to go with the fact that it stands for Bitcoin. Tomek wants to talk about Baltic Honey Badger in Riga. Baltic Honey Badger is coming up at the end of the month. I believe Nostriga, so the Nostra event in Riga, is the 22nd and the 23rd. And then Baltic Honey Badger is the 24th and the 25th.
That is correct.
And then BTC Pay Day is the 26th. Marty and I will both be there. It's going to be a great time. One of the oldest Bitcoin-only conference, maybe the oldest Bitcoin-only conference, depending on semantics. One of the best conferences, period, full stop. It's a great size. Like, the amount of people is not too much, not too little. I like the balance. The city is beautiful. Everyone speaks English. It's incredibly cheap, incredibly safe. And I think you get to kill two birds with one stone. It's really nice because you get to go to this, I think it's the third Noster World Conference. You get to go to Baltic Honey Badger. You get to do both at the same time. I highly recommend it. The guys at Max and Anna at Hoddle Hoddle and the rest of their team, they just throw a good event. They have a highly ethical, solid business in Hoddle Hoddle and now coming out with Debify that backs it. Yeah, see, like, people are like, oh, this one's the oldest. BitBlock Boom is also great. Not trying to argue semantics. Riga's a good time, and you should consider it.
Definitely should. This will be my fourth Baltic Honey Badger conference. Riga is one of my favorite cities in the world that I've traveled to. I'm not as well traveled as many of you out there, but I just love the small city, Eastern European / Soviet brutalist, like the clash of those two architecture styles in Riga. People are extremely nice, and getting together with freaks that live in the Baltics is awesome. Shout out to all the Serbs, the Finns, the Poles out there that listen week in, week out. Obviously, the Latvians as well. Very strong Bitcoin contingency out there.
It's a different crew. Yeah. It's a completely different crew because a lot of people that are local to at least that area, you know, maybe they'll take like an 8-hour bus ride or a train ride or something and come out. This is good. It's a really good vibe. Highly recommend. Yeah. So that's, what is it? It's BalticHoneyBadger.com. And then what's the Nostriga? It's Nostr.world. And I believe the Nostr event is actually free. I think Jack Dorsey just pays for everybody's accommodation. I'm not kidding. Like, I think he just funds those conferences. Like, he just, and there's like a big nonprofit team that just arranges them. Yeah. Which is cool.
Yeah. Bob is asking about a CFTC ruling out yet over jurisdiction. No, there isn't, and it won't come from the CFTC. It'll come. A bill has to go through the House and the Senate and then get signed into law, because it would dictate that they need to expand the mandate of the CFTC to cover spot markets on top of futures. So don't look to the CFTC for a ruling. Look to the House for a bill that will have to make its way through into law. So nothing on that front yet, but stay aware, stay vigilant. Something that everybody should be cognizant of in the lead up to the election. I'm sure there will be a lot of noise, and that is one signal that you should be looking for in the lead up to the election, to be aware of that.
I will. Johnny Rico's asking if you need the vax to go to Riga. No, otherwise we would not be going.
Yeah,
I don't know which places you would need it for now, though.
Yeah, I think you're good.
One piece I want to touch on, and it's something that is fortunately being very actively discussed in policy and politics circles in the U.S., is that it's incredibly important that in America that we lead by example, that open source code is protected speech, that self-custody open source software is not a money transfer business because they never touch money. I am going to be having the Tennessee Attorney General on Citadel Dispatch.
He seems pretty based.
In 2 weeks, which will be a very interesting and special dispatch. It kind of feels like a new era of dispatch. And we're trying to prepare the studio for it. I'm trying to like upgrade my setup here, because Marty knows what my setup here is. Like, we have this beautiful like overkill podcast studio, and then like I just use a webcam. So we're going to try and upgrade it for the Attorney General. And I did have a conversation with him at the park, like a short one, 30 minutes with Zach Shapiro of Bitcoin Policy Institute and peertopeerrights.org, and Alex Gladstein of HRF, that we will also publish hopefully before that conversation. So you get like a little teaser. But yeah, Marty, you were commenting, like, what did you think of the Tennessee Attorney General? Like, it's kind of crazy to me.
Yeah, he's built his own computer. I think somebody handed him a BitAx. Very strong on protecting the freedom of speech, freedom to run code, freedom to run software. I say overall, I mean, between the Attorney General, Governor Lee was extremely impressive. Commissioner Lyash from the Tennessee Valley Authority, which controls the grid system, not only in Tennessee, but Kentucky, Georgia, and a couple other states, as well as parts of other states, at least, and obviously Senator Hagerty as well. All very impressive. Props where props are due to the efforts that yourself, Rod, and others in Tennessee are doing to educate your local politicians at the state level and the federal level. They're extremely impressive and very far up the learning curve when it comes to understanding Bitcoin, its potential to unleash economic freedom and flourishing. And it, from what I can tell, having met many of these individuals a couple times now, from my visits to the park, like, they are allies at that level.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rod specifically has done really great work on that front. Harry has been awesome as well. Bitcoin Policy Institute has been great. And it's just been really positive, especially coming from me. Like, I'm someone who's been very disenfranchised with their politicians. So it's really cool to see. I do see Scott 9000. After we finished the conversation with Attorney General Scrimeti of Tennessee, we got him a BitAx. He has a BitAx. Scott personally handed him a Bitcoin miner. So presumably he is mining Bitcoin. Hopefully he finds the next Solo block. Or maybe, I guess, hopefully like four other plebs find a Solo block first, and then he could be the fifth. He needs to wait his time, but it was amazing. It's pretty crazy to, and he also, what's really cool, I was going to say, it's amazing to see like our elected officials talking about like Bitcoin, open source software, freedom to write code, freedom to use your own hardware, use your own nodes, self-custody. Interesting piece that I've learned recently with the Tennessee Attorney General is he's not an elected official. It's an 8-year term appointed by the Tennessee Supreme Court, which I feel like Tennessee founding fathers, whoever they are, I don't pretend to know that history. I've only lived here for 3 years. That was kind of a cool idea. I like that as a concept.
That's a good embedded gridlock, division of powers, division of checks and balances. It's the term I was looking for. Good checks and balances.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to say what he said explicitly? I don't know if it was on air.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be.
If the federal government postures a certain way.
Yeah. He said one of the key aspects of his job is suing the federal government. And he's happy to sue the federal government to support open source contributors.
Yeah. Incredible to see. Incredible to see. Guys,
let's go.
We've got to jump here, but I just want to end on this comment. The algo is trying to get you angry. We're less than 100 days leading to this presidential election. The rhetoric and the attempts to pull on people's emotions is only going to pick up and accelerate from here. Try to drown out the noise, focus on the white pills, focus on what you could do as an individual, the actions you can take to make the world a better place. Obviously, be cognizant of everything, but don't let it control your emotions. That's the intention behind everything that's going on in the rhetorical landscape leading up to the election.
Be the change you want to see in the world. Delete your Twitter. Bitcoin and Nostra only. Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love. Ta-kee!